Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the Endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about our research by visiting us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation today is with William R. Ferris, Chairman, National Endowment for the Humanities. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Paul.
A lot of people know about the National Endowment for the Humanities, but I bet they don't know all the things it does. Could you describe its activities for us?
Well, the National Endowment for the Humanities is the nation's largest supporter of the humanities, and in so doing, we support public television, radio series like the Ken Burns series on the Civil War and his recent series on jazz. We support programs in local libraries and museums. We support classroom teaching, websites that help teachers, and summer institutes for teachers. We also support research, scholars, the preservation of presidential papers, and we increasingly are reaching out to all American people to try to make the humanities a household word in initiatives like Family History, a website called My History is America's History that allows anyone to put their stories and genealogy online and to connect through that with American history. So we have a broad, wide web of relationships and support that we bring to our nation on behalf of the humanities.
How big is it? How many people work there? And what type of people are they?
Well, by Washington standards, we're very small. We have 170 staff, an annual budget of $120 million. And this staff I think of as a university. These are many PhDs who speak many languages. The diversity of expertise is really extraordinary, not unlike the National Science Foundation. We vet an extraordinary range of programs from international research to the history of American culture. We often have to draw on different languages, different periods of history to vet our projects, and we have scholars in-house who are fully equipped to do that.
Well, tell us about your career.
Well, I grew up on a farm in Mississippi and studied English and later folklore. In terms of the South, my interests have focused on the Deep South, traditions like blues. I did a book on a storyteller, a mule trader, called If You Live and Learn, Then You Die and Forget It All. And I think of that as a sense of urgency in my work as a folklorist. I've also been privileged to direct for 18 years before coming here a Center for Study of Southern Culture at the University of Mississippi, and we produced an encyclopedia of Southern culture that looks at one of the nation's great regions in great detail. And all of that work has in various ways shaped important initiatives that we're now doing here at the Endowment.
How did you get out of academia and come to the Endowment?
Well, I was invited to be offered the position that I have, I think of as the highest honor an academic can ever have. I've worked for many years over my life with the humanities and have been blessed with support both as a scholar and as an administrator from NEH. So to come here and to return that favor by leading and supporting the initiatives that NEH is doing it was something that I never dreamed would be a part of my life. And so when I was offered that opportunity 3.5 years ago, it was certainly an easy choice to make.
It's interesting that you describe the position as both a scholar and an administrator. Which jobs in your career best prepared you for both of those functions?
I think they both did, because I was on the other side of the fence before coming here, requesting support for scholarly research and teaching, and also for administrative work, the renovation of an antebellum observatory, the creation of new curriculum on the South, all of which happened because of NEH. So I know in a very personal way a lot about our programs because I've been a part of them for probably 22 years before coming here. So I feel as though I am a knowledgeable advocate for the humanities in speaking to the White House and to Congress and to the American people on behalf of our agency. I can call on personal experience in saying how powerfully important this work is for the whole nation.
How would you contrast the cultures of academia versus the public sector?
Well, I think in many ways they're similar in that you are responsible to the public, both at a university and at the endowment. But there are differences. Within the university, you respond to a department chair or to a university president. Here, I'm responsible to the White House, to Congress, and to the American people. And I think all three of those entities are equally important. You have to respect and be accountable to all of them. There are new ways of walking here in the sense that you have ethical restrictions that normally would not apply in a private world within a university. But ultimately, it's following your heart, trying to be as honest and clear in what you are doing and want to do as possible. And when I first came here, I was very intimidated by the thought of going into the White House or going into a senator or a congressional office and speaking with people that I'd read about and admired enormously. But to go in and actually talk about your business was something I never thought would be possible. But you quickly realize that you're dealing with other people who share values, and once they understand that the work we're doing is improving and enriching the lives of people they represent, it becomes a clear choice of, I think, supporting this agency, and that's the increased support that we've had from Congress over the last 2 years reflects, I think, the confidence that they have in our work.
How about the differences in management styles?
Well, the differences in management style at the basic level I don't think have changed. I'm the same person I was before. But the scale of management is far greater. I mean, I was directing a center for study of Southern culture, managing about 18 people. Here, there are 170, and it's far more complex. So I had a steep learning curve. I'm still learning every day. But as a result of trying to understand an agency that I already felt I knew but was quickly able to see that there was far more there than anyone really understood, we created, over the last 3 years, 4 working papers as a way to look in great depth at our programs with international programs, with regional programs, science, technology, and the humanities, and teaching and lifelong learning. And these are all on our website, a very impressive upgraded website. We are making ourselves much more visible to the American people and to our own staff. I mean, the range of projects and activities within this single agency is very impressive, and it helps to be able to also pull up a 35-year timeline on our website and look at the distinguished work that has taken place under every president and every chair since our creation 35 years ago.
Well, since you're an expert in Southern culture, I'm curious to know, how would you contrast Washington, D.C. with the rest of the South?
First of all, I have to say very proudly that I would consider Washington a part of the South. In our Encyclopedia of Southern Culture, we include Washington, and from the very earliest colonial period, Southern leaders like Thomas Jefferson played a significant role in the city. So as a Southerner coming here, having worked on the South for 30 years, I found myself very comfortable here.
This is the Business of Government Hour. We'll rejoin our conversation in just a few minutes.